This show furnished by Sid Levine.
Everybody, this is Sid Levine, and it's the Sid Levine Show. Ho ho! Hurricane Irma, the flooding and cleanup in Texas from Harvey. We all pray for everybody's safety. And to all those that help those affected by this disaster and put themselves in harm's way to help, each and every one of us should be very grateful for each and every one of you. If you want to help and donate some money to help everybody, the Red Cross is the place to go to. The number is 1-800-435-7669. That's 1-800-435-7669. We have a fantastic show for you today. And my co-host is back, Liz Fuller. Yes. Give her a hand, everybody. Oh, yeah. Liz, where the hell have you been?
I've been everywhere. No, I went back to the UK. I went to London. So I was in London, and then I went to Wales. The weather was amazing. So I have to plug my home country, don't I?
You do.
To say, you know, if it's not on your bucket list to go to Wales, you're missing out, okay? Just need to tell you that.
All right. So when you were in England, you did some beauty pageant business?
I did. So I own a beauty pageant. I used to own Miss Great Britain, and I sold that twice, which is like Miss USA. Mm-hmm. And now I have a rival pageant that's been going for 7 years, and we're in about 7 countries called Miss British Empire. So it's a funny name. Don't ask me about it. I didn't calculate, like, to grow this business. It just happened. But we're in Hong Kong, Australia, South Africa, Canada, United Kingdom.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And who won?
An Australian girl. But the Australians have won 3 years in a row.
Wow, 3 years in a row?
Yeah, you can't beat them in a bikini, Sid.
Oh, okay. I'll remember that. Yes, I've been to Sydney, which, of course, I should go because I'm Sid.
Well, you know what? You can come next year. The final next year is going to be in Perth, Australia.
Oh, Perth.
So if you want to come and be a judge, Sid, I can officially ask you right now.
Okay, yeah, sure, okay. That's no problem. I think I can get away and do that. That would be great. I'm very happy to have you back, Liz. Okay.
What did I miss? Tell me, did I miss anything?
Did you miss anything? Well, you missed me on the air, unless you listened to me on the podcast.
I was watching you on Facebook Live, actually.
Oh, were you?
Bit of an odd time, though, because I think I was in bed, but I was watching you.
You were watching. Yeah, we're streaming live right now, so everybody can see what we're going through here. We had a few guests that were very, very interesting to talk about. We had a woman, Julie Ray Goldstein, a transgender actress that is fantastic, and she's doing great. And we had a couple of stand-up comics, and it was a lot of fun. But I'm so happy that you're back.
Oh, thank you.
And here with me now, it is my pleasure beyond belief, my pleasure to welcome Jocko Sims.
Hello, hello, hello. How are you?
All right, Jocko. Jocko is one hell of an actor. This guy is in The Last Ship. He plays Carlton Burke. He was also in the series Crash, Masters of Sex. He was in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. He also is in the cast of I'm Dying Up Here for HBO. That's just to name a few of the credits that this guy has accomplished in his career. And I am very, very honored that you came down and agreed to be a guest. Let me ask you, Jocko, straight out forward, how many years have you been doing this?
I am now 14 years in. You're aging me.
14?
14. 14 years of just, I've been here 17 years from Texas, and it just flies by. I can't imagine. I went to UCLA, graduated, studying theater, and that was a long time ago now.
What was your first job?
My first job actually was at a grocery store in San Antonio, Texas.
Oh my.
Yeah, at Albertsons. I bagged groceries, and then I, got on the register and then eventually started like running the front end. I felt really proud about it.
Wow.
And I also worked at TGI Fridays out here.
Really?
Yeah.
So when you came out of here 14 years ago, what was your first acting job?
My first acting job, I booked my first audition, actually, which was a show called 10-8. It was a cop show. Uh-huh. And I played a DJ. And I remember the audition, actually. I went in not knowing exactly what to expect or what I should do. And I took a prop. I took, you know, some headphones. And I think that's kind of taboo to do something like that before. But I didn't know. I just felt, you know, I was just kind of out of my league. But it worked out.
And that's how you got your SAG card? And that was
absolutely.
Your
I was Taft Hartley.
You went from there. And you kept getting bigger and bigger parts?
Yes, sir.
And knew that was, you didn't have to do anything else. That was the way you were going to pay your bills, make a living.
I've been blessed.
And Jack, can I ask?
Go ahead.
Sure.
Were you ever stereotyped? Are there certain roles that you knew when you would audition for? Like, I mean, I can see you playing a DJ, right? I can see that. But then the last two shows that you're on, especially The Last Ship, very different to kind of like a
Absolutely.
DJ, right? So were you ever put in some sort of category when you were auditioning?
Yeah, you know, when I first started, I had people telling me, you're going to work on all the cop shows. You know, you're going to be the criminal. You're going to be the suspect. And I did. I did NYPD Blue and a few of The Shield and all these. So, and that's good. You know, it was good for me. It was a good way to get my foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I've been able to play a bunch of different characters since then, obviously. But it's been great.
Have you... In this stage of your career, are you requested by directors and producers that you just go in and read at the very end for everybody the last callback?
Or? Yeah, at this point, it's pretty much callbacks, and sometimes there's an offer. Some offers come in every now and then.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow. What role of all the roles that you played was the most fun, was the one you loved the most?
The most fun probably has to be The Last Ship.
Really?
Carlton Burke, Lieutenant Carlton Burke. Yeah, we're saving the world. You know, playing a hero along with your friend, Bryn Foster.
Yeah. So I know the Australian guy, and I actually invited my ex-partner. He was best friends with Bryn. Mm. And so I invited Bryn and his lovely wife and their child over to my place, and I cooked for them. So the Australian guy, Bryn, he's such an amazing guy.
Yeah. Bryn's fantastic.
He's like one of the best fighters, I think, in the world. But when you meet him, Sid, he's just like, he looks like boy next door, like pretty face, like he wouldn't hurt a fly.
And he is one of the best fighters in the world. And the producers did not know that, apparently, when he got the part. He got it just on his acting. And so I think they had this elaborate fight scene that they wanted to do with him. And he choreographed it himself. And they were like, who is this guy? We got to lock him in.
Yeah.
You know, he was a guest star at first.
Yeah, I think he was, right?
Yeah.
I think. Tell us about The Last Ship, because obviously that's such a big show. It's not a show that I did start watching it, but I think it's really a male show. Hate to say that.
You'd be surprised. I mean, the fans, it's a lot of women. Well, we got, you know, McSteamy at the helm.
Okay.
Eric Dane is the star of the show. So that,
oh, well, we like him. I mean, now that I've met you, I mean, Sid, thank you very much for bringing this good-looking guy into the studio on my first
thank
show
you.
Back. You know, it made it so easy. But I think I'm going to start watching The Last Ship now, Sid, just because he's here.
You better.
It's awesome. It's really a good show. It's a lot of fun.
Jocko, what was the process of getting The Last Ship, of getting the part? What did you have to go through to do that?
Yeah, you know, when I first got the sides, I wasn't particularly excited about it because I hadn't played a character like this before. I hadn't played this guy as tough as nails. You know, he's a lieutenant, and I'm yelling the entire time in this scene at some sailors. So when I went in for the audition, I remember not being able to grasp it well. And it's just one of those things that I stuck with it. And I got a call like a month later, and they called me in first to see me for another role, and then ended up getting Lieutenant Burke.
So you went in for producers the first time?
And this one was actually cast off the tape.
Off the tape?
Yeah, this was I read for the casting director initially, yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And actually, the character was supposed to be there for about 5 to 7 episodes.
Oh, really?
So season one, I'm in every episode, starting with the second episode. So I just wasn't in the pilot. But season one, I go in, I'm supposed to do 5 episodes, and they lock me in. 5 seasons later, here we are.
Fantastic.
And he's not allowed to tell us any secrets about the 5th season.
No.
Apparently we can't ask him that, is that right?
Nothing about the 5th. Well, the 4th is on now, though.
You know how many actors get a steady paycheck for 5 years?
Man, it is rare. I'm telling you, it's... I talked to some of my newer cast members, the younger ones, and I tell them, just really appreciate this. Actually, one of our sound guys who's been in the business for 30 years, as we will be wrapping up season 5 next week, and he was, you know, getting kind of emotional. He says, I've never had a fifth season of anything. And he's been in the business for 30 years.
Wow.
He's done mainly movies, but it's just, it's a blessing to be on this long.
Wow.
Well, that's a credit to all you guys. I mean, obviously all the talent that's on the show has kind of kept that going because the writers can do well. I mean, the writers can maybe, it can be such a great story that yes, you can get a second season, but I think it really comes down to the talent and it depends on the chemistry and it depends on, you know, how it all gels. So it's kind of like a credit to you guys.
Well, thank you. I think it's really everybody. It's the cast and the crew. For sure, and I really do give credit to the writers. Stephen Kane, who co-created the show with Hank Steinberg, knew nothing about the Navy. And the show is about the United States Navy, and it's just amazing that it's like they have to go to school every week to write, and it's just mind-blowing.
Wow. Now, I'm dying up here.
Mm-hmm.
You did the first episode.
No, I did the fifth episode.
The fifth episode.
Season, yes.
And you played
a Vietnam War vet.
A Vietnam War vet.
Mm-hmm.
To play a role, do you like do research? Do you get into it? Do you live the part?
Yes, for that role, that role I was really excited about. I'd been waiting actually for a long time in my career to have something very meaty and that I can dig into. And I played Melvin. He's very troubled. He's a friend of one of the stand-up comics played by Eric Griffin. So I'm Dying Up Here is a show that's about stand-up comedy in the 1970s and executive produced by Jim Carrey, and it's on Showtime. And so I go to visit my friend, and he's made it. You know, not only is he not suffering from PTSD, or he appears to not be, but he's in Hollywood. He's writing on a television show. He's doing stand-up comedy. And I'm the polar opposite of that. I'm suffering from PTSD. I'm having a hard time on my relationships. I can't keep a relationship. You know, and so just to see him succeed and me struggle for the character was very difficult. So I end up having an emotional breakdown in the comedy club.
Wow. Did you do research?
Yes, I watched Apocalypse Now. That's the first time I actually got with an acting coach. And the particular acting coach that I got, that I worked with, she had a family member who was actually in the war.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked a lot about it and about what these guys were going through. And, it was just a really, really incredible experience for me.
Wow. That's quite a role to play.
It was awesome.
Now, you hear about actors, Heath Ledger or what have you, they get into a role so heavy that they can't release.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get back to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Has that ever occurred with you, that you got so deep into something that it was hard for you to get out of it? Or when you got home, you weren't you?
No. I like to leave it there on the stage.
Just leave it all right.
Yeah, just, you know, I haven't played a character, kudos to Heath Ledger and what he did with the Joker, and that's just one of my favorite performances of all time. I'd love to play something like that, but you know, I think I even heard that Jack Nicholson told him not to do it or be careful with that,
right?
Because you go in for that length of time and you're playing such a dark character, I'm sure that's going to affect you, you know, some way.
Jocko, who do you look up to that's working out there?
Well, I always loved Denzel growing up, but I was mainly inspired by directors and movies. Like, I loved Tim Burton, and I used to love Beetlejuice and Batman and Edward Scissorhands and all these, like, you know, dark, gloomy shows and movies. And I actually want to do something like that. I'd love to be in a horror film or something to that effect. So,
do you get sent a lot of scripts? Do you read a lot?
I do get sent scripts. Actually, I got sent one from my publicist, Mike, I know he's listening right now. someone sent one his way not too long ago. Yeah.
Okay. So do you look out for certain material? Because, you know, I think in the industry, you can wait for your agent to send something to you, but at the same time, you can kind of be proactive and look for stories and maybe look for meatier parts. Because it sounds like you're an actor that really wants to kind of have a role that's fulfilling in a way. You don't just want a paycheck, like I can pick that up from you.
Absolutely. And it's not even just with acting. Like, I want to do other things. I want to direct and write. So as I get older, I'm looking at scripts so that I can direct and produce, actually.
Well, Jocko, you have really done it, man. You're in a very small percentage of actors that work all the time. And so Denzel is the guy that you look up to.
Yeah, he's just great. One of my favorite movies is Training Day, and I remember watching that movie and wondering if it was really necessary for him to go that deep into the character, because I found myself being distracted by his performance. Wow. And I just think that's a great thing. And, you know, as I became educated in the business, I realized that he was just really doing his job, and he nailed it.
Since you started 14 years ago, the progression of African American roles and parts and the writing and so on and so forth. When I first started, there were a lot of films like Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society, and there were a lot of gang films. And then it started to change a little bit, and there started to be more mainstream films. And when you first started to where you see it today, do you see a tremendous change, or do you think that it's a very small change?
I see definitely a tremendous change, and as I said, I'm not playing the criminals anymore. You know, so just even in the short time that I've been in it, you've seen a tremendous change, and I think it's a great thing. I think that it's Hollywood has made major strides, and that it's starting to look more like the world or more like America at times, and you get to, you know, learn other parts of cultures that you usually can't, you know, get a chance to see. So I think that's really great.
That's great. Wow. Well, all I can ask you this, Jocko, somebody listening here, you know, guy just came to Hollywood from Texas or wherever, and he wants to get going and he wants to get it, you know, happening for him. What would you say to somebody that came up to you that's brand new, that just like you were, never worked in Hollywood before? What would you say to them?
I would say that it sounds cliche, but never underestimate the value of hard work. You know, I coach actors as well, and I can always tell when they haven't put in the amount of time that's necessary and for the audition. You got to put in, you got to overdo it. You know, you got to just, I like to be off book personally, and give the casting director your best that you give. And I have this phrase I say, get out of your own way, because we can be our biggest, our own critics, you know, and our own haters. And sometimes you feel like you're not cool enough, or you're not black enough, or white enough, or tall enough, or skinny enough for a role, and you can psych yourself out. You know, I didn't think that I could play a lieutenant on The Last Ship, and here I am 5 seasons later. So you just kind of got to get out of your own way and really believe and give yourself a chance.
So is it a case of don't have a negative mindset, like keep yourself really positive and believe in yourself?
Absolutely.
But don't you think there's a lot of people in this town that aren't working? More actors are out of work than in work. So how do you stay strong? Because obviously when you first came to this town, I mean, you know, you were packing bags in a grocery store. You've worked at TGI Fridays, right? So, you know, how did you stay so positive and so focused and so strong? Because in this town, I see a lot of people failing with that. Mm-hmm. How do you just keep your eyes on the prize?
Well, I was fortunate that I was at school and studying. And I think that that's the thing that I would tell everybody to do, because some people actually don't get into a class. Mm-hmm. I think you have to really study your craft. You have to know your craft. You have to know the history. And get in there with like-minded individuals and make friends. My first agent, I got through a friend, you know, who hooked me up. So it's getting around people who are like-minded and studying the craft.
Do you have any teachers that you recommend for anybody listening?
Teachers, you know what? I just, all my teachers were at, like, UCLA and Santa Monica College. Uh-huh. So I'd highly recommend those two schools.
Quick question. Have you ever thought of doing theater? Because obviously being a British girl, you know, I've been brought up with theater background. Mm-hmm. Do you know, I would consider yourself as a, you know, you're a Hollywood actor, mm-hmm. you know, stratosphere, you could be big, big name in all the films next. Do you ever want to do theater? Do you want to tread the boards? Is that something in this town people want to do?
Yeah, I have a lot of friends that that do, but for me, my focus is just, you know, I studied theater for 5 years and I did plays at school, and I kind of feel like that's not something I want to do at this point, but right. maybe down the road I'd get back into it.
What about commercials? Did you ever do any?
I did. Absolutely. I did, my biggest national commercial was a Best Buy commercial with Kevin Garnett,
oh, cool.
who at the time played for the Timberwolves, and that was a lot of fun.
Wow. There's yeah. a lot of money in commercials.
Yeah, there can be.
Do your theatrical agent, I mean, Sid, you kind of represent people for both, right? But do your theatrical agents...
That's Sid, what are you... You're an agent.
Yes, I think so.
And then here you are on the show. I think you're doing fantastic, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much, Jocko. Well, yeah. I have guests like you. How can I do bad, man?
Oh, man, you can aim higher, please.
Oh.
Hey, I tell you what, Sid, I'm enjoying this. You know, we could, I could give you a list of really good-looking guys in this town right now to invite in over the next few weeks.
Yeah, you can do that, and I can watch the bikinis.
And by the way, Liz, you said that they're looking for judges... For the finals, right? When? I'm available.
Okay. Well, why don't you write your telephone number down on a piece of paper for me?
All right.
And when I'm looking for a judge, I'll remember.
So, Jocko, have you ever worked out of the country?
I have worked in Canada.
Canada?
And they rape you in Texas.
Yeah,
it's just,
that's right.
Just, yeah, it's pretty brutal.
There's a lot of production now up in, is it Toronto you went?
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
absolutely.
In Canada.
Yeah. I worked in Toronto and in Vancouver.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, if I can, are you married or do you have a girlfriend?
No, I am not married. I am single.
Okay. So being a working actor,
mm-hmm.
how does that affect your social life? Is it something that, it's kind of hard because when you say you're an actor, people go, oh, no security or.
Well, yeah. I would never date an actor.
Yeah.
Oh.
Although it could change tonight.
does that kind of like, ever get into it with you?
It's,
that you're an actor?
No, I don't let it. Not really. It's, I don't know. If anything, it's kind of cool, you know? I think
if you're a working actor.
Yeah, if you're a working actor, it's kind of cool. But I hate the conversation sometimes when people say, what do you do? And then you tell them, and they're like, oh, well, what have you done? You know, you got to give your resume all the time.
That's right. It's the same with an agent. You know, I'm an agent. Well, who do you represent?
Yep.
Yeah, it's none of your business.
Jack, do you get recognized?
I have, yes.
I mean, I'm sure there's like loads of people watch The Last Ship, right? It's like one of the biggest shows.
Sure.
So, can you be going to, say, the supermarkets on TGI Fridays and people kind of recognize you in the places where you started out?
Oh, sure. I mean, it happens. I one of my favorite memories was, with The Last Ship, was at Chipotle. You know, the guy was making my burrito. He's like, hey, are you in The Last Ship? I was like, yeah. He's like, do you play the lieutenant? I was like, yeah, yeah. He's like, cool. He's just really happy to be making my burrito. So it's moments like that, you know, it makes it fun. It's exciting. Yeah.
Really? That must be great for you to feel that, you know, people want your autograph or people recognize your work.
It's the best feeling.
And
it really is.
They validate what you're doing.
Absolutely.
You know, that's great.
Are you highly critical of yourself? Because for me, I could when I used to be on TV back home in the UK, I could never watch myself.
Yeah, it's
tough. Never wanted to. I think we can sometimes be our own worst critic. Mm-hmm. Are you like that?
Yeah, it's tough, especially in the beginning when I first started. I was making faces I don't make in life. Yeah.
So when you're filming on The Last Ship, how many takes do you do, say, of a certain scene? And then when you watch it, do you kind of get disappointed and think, why did the editors use that one? That was like my worst take.
That happens. But the thing I hate the most is when you're filming and as soon as you're done with the scene, this happens every time. As soon as you're done with the scene, you go, ah, I should have done that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just really connects with for you sometimes.
Jocko, have you ever done a love scene?
Yes, I have. I've done a few of those, actually.
We'd like to watch that one when we sit.
I did on Masters of Sex, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, with Caitlin Fitzgerald. Awesome, awesome actress.
Some people say that's very difficult to do because of the camera angles and you got to do things over and over again.
Listen, I heard that there's a rumor going around that Jon Hamm from Mad Men has some tequila before he does all of his scenes. So I bought a bottle and I had some. I'm not going to say whether or not my co-star partook in that, but yeah, and we had fun. It made it a lot more fun. Calms the nerves.
Well, I want to tell you, Jocko, we have fired, 7,000 questions at you, and you have handled them fantastic.
I think.
You're good at improv, and you know your business. And when you know something, you're very, very confident in what you do, and it comes across. And, all I can say is that it means so much to me that you came here. And I wish you all the success in the world. And I know the next time I see you, you probably will have... And if you care, an Emmy and or maybe even an Oscar nomination and win. I mean, you're something else. Only 14 years in the business and doing all this.
Thank you.
That's incredible. All right, Jocko Sims, thank you so much for being on the show. Take care. We'll be right back. Sid Levine, The Sid Levine Show, 790 KABC.
For many businesses, hiring is tough, which makes it critical to choose the right place to post your jobs. You need qualified candidates fast and on budget, and you don't want to sign a long-term contract or pay upfront fees. That's why you need Indeed.com, the world's number one job site. Independent research shows Indeed delivers 6 times more hires than any other job site. You can post a job in minutes and even set up screener questions to help you zero in on qualified candidates. You can review applicants, take notes, and schedule interviews, all from an easy-to-use online dashboard. For a limited time, Indeed is offering new users a $50 credit to make their first job listing a sponsored job, with premium visibility so more candidates will see it. You want to make a great hire fast, and this exclusive offer gives you a head start. Find out why over 3 million businesses use Indeed for hiring. To redeem this offer, go to Indeed.com/radio. That's Indeed.com/radio. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply. For many businesses, hiring is tough, which makes it critical to choose the right place to post your jobs. You need qualified candidates fast and on budget, and you don't want to sign a long-term contract or pay upfront fees. That's why you need Indeed.com, the world's number one job site. Independent research shows Indeed delivers 6 times more hires than any other job site. You can post a job in minutes and even set up screener questions to help you zero in on qualified candidates. You can review applicants, take notes, and schedule interviews, all from an easy-to-use online dashboard. For a limited time, Indeed is offering new users a $50 credit to make their first job listing a sponsored job, with premium visibility so more candidates will see it. You want to make a great hire fast, and this exclusive offer gives you a head start. Find out why over 3 million businesses use Indeed for hiring. To redeem this offer, go to Indeed.com/radio. That's Indeed.com/radio. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
You're unique, so why is your mattress one size fits all? Because a custom mattress costs thousands, until now. Hi, I'm Christian von Rickenbach, founder of HelixSleep.com, where you can buy a mattress online, customized for you, for hundreds of dollars instead of thousands. Go to HelixSleep.com, answer a few simple questions, and we build you the most comfortable mattress you'll ever sleep on. Shipping is free, and you have 100 nights to try it out. Go to HelixSleep.com/talkradio and get $50 off your order. HelixSleep.com/talkradio.
If you're a small business, first impressions can make all the difference. With Grasshopper, you get all the features of a professional business phone system on your mobile phone. Choose a business phone number, make calls and send texts, making it easy for you and your customers to stay connected. Even get voicemails transcribed. Set up your account in minutes with no long-term contracts and 24/7 customer support. Make your small business big. Now get $20 off your plan when you visit grasshopper.com/radio. That's grasshopper.com/radio.
Fall is the best time to feed your lawn. With 10% off Scott's Turf Builder Winter Guard Fall Weed and Feed and Fall Lawn Food at the Home Depot. Scott's Turf Builder Winter Guard feeds your lawn to build strong, deep grass roots for winter when you need it most. So it'll be lush, green, and beautiful next spring when you want it most. Scott's Turf Builder Winter Guard Fall Weed and Feed and Fall Lawn Food. 10% off now at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Valid through October 4th.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. Think you can't manage the down payment it takes to purchase a new home? Think again. You could move into a $150,000 home with as little as $1,500 down with our 1% down payment option. The rate today on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.99%, APR 4.19%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Talk Radio 790, KABC News Update. I'm Steve Cumming. More than 3 million people are without power as Hurricane Irma continues to churn up Florida's west coast. Florida Power and Light spokesman Bill Orlov is asking for customers' patience as restoration can take weeks.
We serve 35 counties. It's a big chunk of the state. So we will be, when it's safe to do so, out assessing our grid, assessing the damage, and being able to determine how long it will take, not only system-wide, but then in certain counties, how long it will take for us to get the lights back on for our customers.
The center of the storm is about 15 miles inland from Fort Myers. KABC SoCal weather, flash flood watch is in effect through late tonight with a 50% chance of rain. Gusty winds and small hail are possible in the northern parts of L.A. County, including the valleys. Overnight, rain will diminish and lows will be in the mid-60s to around 70. More news coming up and continuous coverage on KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
I'm Nick Sobolewski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I shopped the many highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $27 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 800-461-2525. That's 800-461-2525. 800-461-2525. Or go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health issue and company and other factors. Not available in all states.
With the sale of every new vehicle, Hyundai and its dealers make a contribution to Hyundai Hope on Wheels. Hyundai dealers have donated over $130 million to fund life-saving research at children's hospitals across the country. In the month of September alone, Hyundai will donate $8.5 million. This past week, UCLA Mattel Children's Hospital and City of Hope received the Hyundai Scholar Hope Grant or Hyundai Young Investigator Grant to support critical research performed by their talented doctors and researchers. September is National Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. Did you know that every 36 minutes, a child is diagnosed with cancer? We want kids battling cancer and their families to know that they don't fight this awful disease alone. Hyundai and its dealers are helping fight childhood cancer with Hyundai's Hope on Wheels through the sale of every new vehicle. Thank you, Hyundai, for all you're doing to make a difference in the fight against childhood cancer.
Oh, yeah, here we go. Hollywood Swinger. Baby, all right, this is Sid Levine, and we are back with the Sid Levine Show. Oh, yeah. All right. Hey. Okay. There we go. Thank you oh so very much. Thank you. Okay. My next guest is Peter Macon. Peter Macon, thank you so much for coming here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, the voice to hear already.
Oh, my God.
It's the earphones.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Hot mic.
You are. Well, let me get straight right into it. You are a series regular on Orville, Seth MacFarlane's new series on Fox that debuts tonight.
Guilty as charged.
Whoa, yeah. Congratulations.
Thank
big
you.
Time.
Thank
that
you.
Is... That most likely is going to be a humongous hit.
I certainly hope so. It's a game changer for me personally, but I think that TV needs some this influx of science fiction that's clean and hopeful. It's we're a 1-hour show, so It's not all jokes. It's dramatic. And it's Seth MacFarlane. I mean, you know, so, I mean, it's science fiction, which I love, and it's satire. It's, you know, from the mind of Family Guy and Ted and American Dad. And, you know, he's like a modern day, you know, Frank Sinatra, I think.
Well,
you know?
he's got one hell of a singing voice out there.
He does. He does. He's a great singer, and he knows a lot of songs, and he gets into this mode. He goes like, when he starts to sing, it's like, you know, I mean, most of the time he's kind of quiet with baseball hat and glasses, but when he gets up there, when the black suit and the 40-piece orchestra behind him, it's a different guy. So,
you had a major recurring role on Shameless.
I did, I think 2 seasons, 8 episodes, I think.
8 episodes.
Which was a cool character arc. I loved the show, and, I was a fan of the show, and, I went on and I was playing Luther, which is Carl's girlfriend's dad.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Carl's kind of like the criminal. Well, they're all kind of criminal. He's like the real criminal of the
right.
family. And he meets this woman, this girl, and then I turn out to be her dad, and he's a cop, Chicago cop. I grew up in Chicago, so I'm kind of familiar with Chicago cops.
Oh, okay.
And then our character, my arc, I thought once she was sort of in the fray, after they, you know, not spoiler alert, when they broke up, that my character would be, you know, gone. Mm-hmm. But like he and I, they wrote it, and he and I bonded in this sort of, not father, son, it's corny, but like this, you know, from a guy, because my character was a guy who was from the streets and who was kind of a criminal. He turned his life around, and so it was a mentor to Carl.
You said, Peter, you said that it was a game changer of getting Orville.
Oh, yeah.
And you mean that by financially and
financially, of course, career-wise, of course. But, I mean, I've been at... I've been being paid to be an actor since 1988.
Whoa.
And, you know, I'm mostly your last guest, Malcolm, I was listening, and it's like a lot of theater. Like, I come from a primarily theater background for probably 20 years, of being on stage. And, you know, we all know the theater. You know, I'll never pay my student loans off doing theater, but it's
no money in it.
You know, well, I mean, I sustain myself, but I have a family and,
sure.
You know, so it is a game changer. I'm like,
now, Peter, you won an Emmy for voiceover work in when? 2002 or so?
2002, while I was still in grad school. I thought it was a joke.
No, your voice is pretty special.
Isn't it something else, Liz?
Yeah, I just want to listen. I actually don't even want to talk now.
My gosh! I mean, what did you win it on? What project?
HBO used to do this series called Animated Tales of the World, and they would take these folk tales from all over the world and animate them in a variety of ways. And the episode that I did was about John Henry. The steel driving man, you know, of course, the legend of John Henry and the railroads. And the animator, Andrei Zaludikon, he was from Russia, and he had this very impressionistic, it's a very beautiful 15-minute long film, which is why I was like, this is a joke. But it's very beautiful, impressionistic animation. And they went, and after they edited it together, they thought that the American audiences, or just audiences in general, wouldn't understand the truncated story without a narrator. So they asked me to narrate it, and I did it, and it was 15 minutes long. And, you know, I was going to clown class in school, and I got a call at like 8 in the morning just when I was getting up trying to make it to class, and someone was saying, you need to come to the registrar's office and, you know, fill out all this paperwork because you won an Emmy. And I'm like, stop playing jokes on me right now. I got to get to class. This is not funny. Oh. You know, I'm very stressed out.
Wow.
And yeah, it was a creative Emmy.
Did that help you winning an Emmy? Did that help you get other work?
Not really per se, because I had to go back to school. You know, I was in my second year of grad school. So I imagine if I had stayed in, and I didn't have an agent. And, you know, it was a weird
thing.
Won
an Emmy without an agent.
I know. I ran into, I think it was Stephen Baldwin in like an Urban Outfitters in Hollywood. And my friend he came down from Seattle and he was photographing everything, and he wound up talking to Stephen Baldwin, and he's like, yeah, my friend just won an Emmy and he doesn't have an agent, can you help him? And I'm like, why did you do that? But then Stephen was like, yeah, sure, I'll help you. But then I disappeared and went back up to New Haven to the Yale School of Drama, which is where
wow.
Is that how you got the agent?
Yeah, actually, because
when so your friend did you a favor, right?
No, well, it was a year too early because it was in my second year of school, and so then I, you know, came here for the Emmys, and then I went right back to school and was in a production that I had to jump right on stage for to, you know, continue rehearsing.
Wow.
So it wasn't very glamorous, but my mother loved it. So that's, you know.
that's, where do you keep the Emmys?
It's here now, but for the past, I think, 10, 12 years, it's been in a book, a china cabinet in my mother's apartment. And so now my mother just moved out to live with us, and so it's here. And it's, you know, sitting next to the headshot that I was using.
So you went to Yale.
I did.
To get the craft down.
Well, I mean, as I said, I was working. When I graduated high school, I went on a tour for 4 months instead of going straight into college. So I toured for 4 months, and then I came back and went to community college. And then I went to art school for a year, and then I went on tour again. And so it took me about 10 years to get my BFA because I was constantly working or leaving town and changing schools and, you know, racking up lots of debt. And then I moved to New York because I was in San Francisco by then. And I moved to New York, and I moved out to New York with the show. And the show got extended, and, like, I had an apartment and a girlfriend and, like, you know, job in New York. And then the show ended, and I got an agent, like a C-level agent, but an agent nonetheless. And then the show ended, and my relationship ended, and then, like, the agent was like, eh. So I went to do this play in Bristol, Pennsylvania, at the Bristol Riverside Theater, and it wasn't what I wanted to be doing. After so many years of working in amazing theater projects and amazing working with older actors, and learning, you know, etiquette and professionalism and learning what it means to be an actor professionally. And so I had a friend who was at the Yale School of Drama at the time, and he's like, you should audition. Because I was ready to, I didn't know what I was going to do. I was like, if this is what it means to be an actor in New York and doing, you know, crappy theater for peanuts, and, you know, I just don't want to do this. And so I said, well, maybe I'll just do something weird. I'll go to grad school. I'll take acting classes, because my acting classes were from hands-on. You know, I'd never taken an acting class before. Mm. And so I auditioned, and, you know, fate would have it that I got into the program, and I did that for 3 years. And then when I got out of that, I got a job with Anna Deavere Smith at Lincoln Center, like, within a week. So I'm like, oh, I guess this is worth, you know, something.
Yeah, it's very prestigious.
Yeah, so it worked. But the training was amazing. At one point, I had like 5 different plays that I was doing at the time, you know. It was like being in the Marines of acting, you know what I mean? Not to make light of, you know, our military, but like, but it was, you know, it's 15, 16 hours a day, 6 days a week for 3 years. And after that, you're like, whatever, you can do whatever, like accents, all kinds of dialogue, anything you want to do, if whatever.
But not bad at that British.
I can't do it. I can do it. It's Millwall Cockney. I like it. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? And then, you know, if you want to go down to Jamaica, we can do that too. We can do, if you want to go to Jamaica, to Nigeria, or the dialects. And so it makes you very flexible in terms of, and then the clown too. This is the thing. I took 2 years of clown. Like, it was basically Lecoq, you know, the French school of clown, but, for two years. In fact, I was on my way to clown class when I got that call about the Emmy, and I was like, it was the hardest class in the world because they strip you down, and, the whole purpose is to make people laugh, but they laugh because you're humiliated, not because you think they're funny, you know. So, you know, my clown teacher, Chris Bays, you know, you go up there and you do your shtick, and he'd sit back with his little glasses and be like, it's not funny, go back. You know, so it's, and you do that for 5 hours, you know.
Wow.
And it's so, again, the training, it helped me to just play, and not be worried about the financial aspect of trying to get my next job or blah, blah, blah.
So you have all this incredible background, training background, theater background, and you come to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And Los Angeles, of course, has great theater, but it's not known for its theater. It's known for the TV, the film.
Absolutely. More TV now, but yeah, and the film too, but yeah, the more TV. I used to think, oh, I don't want to do TV. I want to be a movie star. I want to be in the movies. Cause that's where, you know, you can really dig deep and you can, but the idea of being a series regular on a show didn't even occur to me because I think when I moved out here, in 2006, from New York, I was still trying to get into the movie business, and but I got a couple of guest stars on like Supernatural and Dexter, and like really good, you know, fun shows.
You had an agent, obviously.
I did. I got my agent. Her name is Hannah Roth. Hello, Hannah, if you're listening. With Don Buchwald and Associates, but yes. she came to our showcase in 2003 in New York. She was a junior agent in New York at the time, mm-hmm. and she was the first person to call. And I had like 30 meetings and then 30 meetings out here. And I was just like, you know, I like that woman that called first straight away. Cause she's like, you know, and so she and I are really good friends now. And I've had the same agent since 2003. And
love that. That's kind of rare.
I love to hear that.
Yeah.
No, I believe in loyalty. And then she came to our baby shower. She came to
Family.
She's family. She has a couple of my paintings. Like she's just like, she's, you know, we're really good friends.
That's
know?
Great. Yeah. So, coming out to L.A., I guess you're married. And you have a child.
Yeah.
There's no security in acting.
Yeah, I know. If we had this conversation 3 months ago when we're in the middle of production and everything's great and it's fine and, you know, but now we're in that sort of chasm where, we're waiting to find out how
right.
the people respond to the show and if we get, you know, greenlit for another season. And if that's true, then okay, then I can bank on that stability. And if not, you know, daddy's got to get out there and make some change. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Have there been any times over the years where you've just wanted to throw the towel in? Because we obviously have actors or out-of-work actors probably listening. And, you know, we've had incredible, inspiring stories tonight. Were there any times where you just, you know, you always hear people sometimes get their break just when they're giving it up? Have there been any times where you're going to throw it in, or were you just relentlessly focused?
I mean, I've never, ever. I mean, I think I've wanted to be an actor since I was in second grade, honestly, and I'll tell you that story down. But when I did move out here, so I moved out here in 2006, and then had a bit of, you know, for 8 months, you know, had no friends and had no jobs, no, like, I'm auditioning and not booking anything. And then I did book, and it was fine. And then I left because of writer's strike in 2007 was imminent, like a tsunami. And then the Oregon Shakespeare Festival called, and they're like, hey, are you interested in coming up to play Othello? And, excuse me, I've done quite a bit of Shakespeare, and, so I was like, yeah, I'll go up there, and I'll play Othello for 6 months, and then I'll come back to L.A. and, you know, continue to hustle. And then the writer's strike kept going on, and they offered me then Macbeth in the next year, so like I played that. And so I wound up staying up there 5 years. And so then, I know.
That's a long time.
Right? 6 months to 5 years.
Your agent must have loved that.
They hated it. But then it was time for me to go. I was ready to come back and continue like the seriousness of pursuing. Cause I been doing theater for so long and it's been great, but I was interested in expanding myself, you know, as an actor in the craft and like learning like the difference between, you know, film and TV and theater, the different kind of actor that it requires. And so then to answer your question, I left Oregon and, was very low on money and came back to LA and my sublet, I was got stuck in San Francisco for a week and I had the sublet for a month. So when I finally got to, LA, my sublet was only 3 weeks long and I was auditioning and nothing was happening. And then I got this audition that, it basically came down to if I didn't get this job, which I did get, you know, it's kind of a Cinderella story. I was going to be homeless and I was going to be living in my beautiful red BMW that, you know, like, I was like, well, I can sell this and like live in hotels. But I've never felt like, no, I don't want to do this. partly because I were giving it up, partly because I've been, you know, my mother, you know, she's always kind of been in my corner, and she's always been like, whatever you want to do, just do it to the best of your ability, and I will support whatever that is. She's never been like, you need to be a doctor or be a lawyer. Just whatever you're going to do, you do it. And she wanted to be a concert pianist, and, you know, through a lot of different machinations, she wasn't able to do that and fulfill her dreams. And I've seen what it looks like to see artists not do that. And I've just never been, I don't know. I mean, I've had all kinds of crazy jobs. And I've been a butcher, and I was a vegetarian. I've worked in a butcher shop. That was the weirdest
That's
one.
That's why you're a vegetarian, right?
Yeah, well, I'm not anymore, but I mean, I was then. But I've had all kinds of crazy jobs, and it's always been a means to an end to get to, you know, because I've been jolted by the electricity of what it means to do that. And it's better than, you know, I would imagine crack.
Well, you obviously can't do anything else. I think an actor is born to do it, right? And yeah, you can't do it.
I mean, I don't think that either you're a true actor.
Yeah, I don't think I mean, I'm really not good at many other things. you know, I make music and I paint, you know, I'm an artist, but like, I mean, I had a job at Bed Bath & Beyond in San Francisco, and I lived across the street at the time, and I just felt like I was dying, like no sunlight, and it was neon, like fluorescent lights, and every chance I got, 10 minutes, I'd go home and play my guitar for 10 minutes and come back, you know, but it's just like, I just...
You don't want to fold towels?
I'll do it, but if there's a job after and in it afterwards, I'll do it.
Well, so when you get the 20% off coupons in the mail now, do you just throw them straight away?
No, I do not. I cut them and I organize them because I know what it's like to stand in line for government cheese.
So Peter, I asked Jocko this question. Let me ask you. Somebody comes to town, mm-hmm. they're listening right now to you talk. They have nothing. They just feel that they are true to their heart and they want to act. What advice would you give somebody that comes out here that wants to do this?
Well, there's lots of different avenues and platforms for people just getting started, you know, especially non-union work. And I used to say, I think if you really want to be an actor in America, you got to do New York, and you got to do regional theater, and you got to do L.A. Because those are the arenas, right? And so, you know, I've had conversations with actors, people, you know, burgeoning actors want to be like, so what do you want to be an actor? I want to be famous. And I'm like, well, good luck with that. Like, yeah, Hollywood's a place to do it. I don't know. There's people famous for doing nothing. So, but I think that you got to know why you want to be an actor. And you gotta always be working on your craft. I mean, you gotta have 5, 6, 7 monologues ready to go right there. You gotta pay attention to the shows. You gotta pay attention to the tone. It's not about you. That's the thing. You're an instrument. You're a conduit. You're a meat puppet. You know what I mean? But the passion and the drive, why you wanna do it, that, if you can't say that in 5, 10 words or less, then go figure it out and then come back until you can say it. Cause it's not glamorous, you know, it's a lot of work, you know, like this show, like Orville. Oh, we should be talking about that, by the way.
Yes.
I'm in the prosthetics for the show 15 hours a every time I'm on set. And that's sometimes 4, 5, 6 days a week with some episodes, 8, 9 days a week, which don't exist. But so, you know, and you realize that you're working with, the makeup team that put me into the prosthetics. Howard Berger is an award winning, I think he's won 2 Oscars, for his work. And, Garrett Emmel, the guy who would actually be applying the makeup and for an hour and a half every day. He's a technician and a very skilled, masterful, articulate, or meticulous person with his makeup, and respecting his time and respecting what his process is. And so, you know, it's not about, you know, it's a collaboration with artists, and that you have to have this understanding. And this is the stuff that I learned from older cats in the biz before, when the NEA was still strong and there was still money, you know, in public arts education. And that's how I got started, because there were artists that came into my high school and my public high school in the hood that did residencies and showed me that there were other possibilities of. And so I would say to people who are just coming to Hollywood or to whatever, starting their careers, know why it is you want to do it. I've loved it since I mean, in second grade, and we're doing Alice in Wonderland, like the kids wanted to go to recess, and I'm like, "Masters, we must rehearse." No, I'm serious, and they're like, "Screw you, I'm going to play kickball." But also, you're not the first, nor are you the last. I mean, so humility and tenacity, and you have to have the heart of a child and the skin of a shark, and you can't take stuff personal. So,
thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
Peter.
You're welcome. I'd go on for
good luck. Good luck.
I'm going to go watch my show.
Big time. Good luck
thank
on
you.
Orville. It's going to be a big hit.
I hope to come back and talk to you again.
All right. I just want to say real quick here, I'd like to mention now the 16th anniversary of 9/11 tomorrow. Please remember the victims and the first responders' heroism. It's a solemn obligation for myself to remember those who were killed and those who survived. May we never forget that tragic day, and may we never forget that we live in the greatest nation on earth. See you next Sunday, Liz.
And Dee Dee.
See you next Sunday.
I will be back
next
week.
Thank you again, Peter.
Okay.
See you then, everybody. Sid Levine, the Sid Levine Show, 790 KABC.
Peace.
This show furnished by Sid Levine.